SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, a little past the top of the hour. Rick Violette was the man of the hour when it came to the big dirt race on Saturday at Belmont. And Diversify, we all knew what he was going to try to do, which was take control early and dictate terms. He didn't just dictate terms. He shoved those terms down everybody's throat. A sub 2 minute mile and a quarter, a suburban win for Rick and the Evanses. And Rick Violette joins us. Congratulations, Rick.
Thank you. It was a really, really cool day.
That's one way to describe it. Rick, what is the mentality or a trainer perspective when you know exactly where you're going to go and you just have to see how much pressure the horse gets and how long he can get away with relaxed fractions?
Well, it wasn't as black and white as that one. Bob Baffert put Dr. Dior on the plane to run both of his horses. It really started, to scramble your brain a little bit because he looked like he could be significant speed in the race. And when the post positions were drawn and we drew, the 10 hole and they drew inside of us, the inside for a speed horse is a huge advantage going a mile and a quarter. And I'll be honest, last fall, in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, we had it our own way on a couple of levels. One, we drew the absolute inside, and we also had unpressured, pace. We went 23 and 4, 47 and change, I believe. And that was a huge, huge advantage for us. Now, with kind of tables turned, we weren't going to be the only speed. We drew the 10 hole, so you really have to step hard on the gas leaving there if you're going to be in the mix early. It's such wondering if you might be looking at horses. And we stocked, in the New York Bred Stake that we just won. He laid third off of some pretty fast fractions and got the job done. But he's certainly better on the lead. There's no question. He gets braver. He gets into a great rhythm. And what was surprising in the race is Dr. Doerr was not horse pressing us. It was an Audian war story. And that's actually when Irad kind of said, well, if those are the two pressing me, maybe I'm going too slow. And because we went 23 and changed the first quarter, I went, oh, that works. And then we pumped it up to, 46 and 1. I went, ooh, that's a little fast. But obviously, Diversify was up to the task and kind of ran them off their feet. I was worried at 46 and 1 when we went 9 and change. When I looked at the horses behind us, they were all off the bridle and scrambling a little bit. I didn't feel as bad as I did at the half mile, after we'd gone a half mile.
Well, the 109 and 3, and that's when I said, well, somebody's got to make a run. And it wasn't like there weren't horses making runs. But as you say, when they were midway on the turn, it became very apparent that Arad was just, just sitting. And when he shook him up a little, he just, it was stunning, Rick. I mean, everybody in the building had a slack jaw watching him down the stretch.
Yeah, and me too. So, speed is always dangerous. There's no question. And what it does sometimes, it takes everybody else out of their game. If they have a nice quarter mile, even 3/8 of a mile run, but they're not going to be in the race because they haven't used any gas. By then, they have to start gearing up at the half mile pole or even further just to get in the race so they have an opportunity to use a late run. But what's happened is they use some of their fuel, and their late run doesn't develop as effective as it might have if they were able to be a little more patient. So you also need a pretty fast horse to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, exactly. And he has shown, time and again that he is that kind of horse. This career best effort, I mean, put it into perspective, and, he's a five-year-old, he's a gelding. It's not as if, you're building any stallion resume. You can be very selective about what you do with him. At the same time, Mr. Evans, obviously tickled to win a Suburban, and, what does that mean to you as well, and where do you go with him?
Well, I mean, we'll nominate for the Whitney, but I really think it comes up too quick. It's 4 weeks. I was thinking five weeks originally, but it's actually 4 weeks. So I think we really set our sights on the Woodward, which is the 4 weeks after the Whitney, and then go from there. I mean, it's cool winning these, they're kind of legacy races, the Gold Cup, the Suburban. They have a tremendous amount of history. Great horses have won it, so it's pretty special.
For Ralph Evans, too, I mean, one of the, there were people, I don't have to tell you how happy people were for you and him and his wife, Lauren, and this was a very popular win, Rick.
It's actually his daughter, Lauren.
That's his daughter, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Judith is his wife, and she was pretty happy as well.
Yeah. He's one of those owners that it's so nice to have him at the racetrack. The Warrens were there as well on Saturday. It was a tremendous atmosphere at Belmont Saturday.
Well, it is. They've been clients of mine for probably 30 years now. Incredibly loyal, incredibly patient, take bad news sometimes better than they take good news. So they're perfect for the game and just been, a tremendous asset for me. He's obviously excited, and we plan, hopefully we have, a couple more years left to diversify on the racetrack because he doesn't have to run off to the breeding shed.
Exactly. Let me ask you about another winner from the last couple of weeks, this one for Len Riggio, that Byself, the New York bred.
Yeah, she's a pretty nice filly. She won first time out, and she got a shin, and it was one of those pain in the neck shins that kind of took forever to get over, and we tried her a couple of times, and we finally put that past us, and she ran well the other day, and we're trying to get a race to go for her this weekend if we can, because there actually isn't much in the first book up at Saratoga, so hopefully we can get a second race into her and then maybe go get a little braver as we go forward.
Let me ask you about a couple of horses that people can maybe keep track of. Toss Up.
Really nice filly. It was pretty expensive yearling. I've been trying to hustle Chester Broman for a number of years to send me a two-year-old or two, and I've got one of his horses in the barn, but I had to buy it. He's a terrific guy and a real stalwart in New York bred racing, and he got some great mares that he makes their foals New York bred. So, but she might be all right. I might even take a shot this Sunday. The New York bred stake is coming up with a lot of maidens in it, and we might take a shot in there.
Nice. How about the Into Mischief colt for Ralph Evans, Binary?
He's pretty well the other day. We call him Andre after Andre the Giant. He was a pretty big two-year-old we bought, and looks like a four-year-old. But a lot of turf in his pedigree as well. I mean, we'll start on the dirt, but he has shown some talent.
How far away from a start?
He's pretty close. He jumped. We got dirt in his face the other day, and he worked pretty fast. So I think I need to jump him out of the gate another time, and then maybe kind of a maintenance work, and then look for a spot.
What can you tell us about Terrorist Tantrum?
My politically motivated owner, he's actually another nice horse by Weekend Warrior. And he's probably at the same stage as Binary. You know, they're very close. You know, sometimes a little sniffly nose or a shit heats up such a back more than you'd like. But he's also on threshold, another work or two, and we'll lead him over there.
Very nice. Well, Rick, I know you've got a place to be, and I'll let you go here and cannot congratulate you enough on Saturday. It was one of the real highlights of the season.
Well, thank you so much. I got about 100 texts after the race, so it was certainly a joy. He's a terrific horse, and the owners are even better.
Rick Violette, everybody, and Ralph Evans with Diversify. We'll look toward the end of Saratoga and a Woodward try. Speaking of legacy races, that would be another nice addition to the resume of Diversify. And great to catch up with Rick. Gave you some two-year-olds to look forward to as well. Toss Up, Binary, and Terrorist Tantrum. Let's take a break here. About 15 in. They're getting going at the July sale. Going to take a timeout. We'll go to Dr. Allday in about 15 or so. And got a host of topics for him for Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Talking away. I don't know what's left to say. I'll say it anyway. Today is not my day. It's about you shying away. I'll become a real life all change. Take on me. Take me on.
We're back at the races. Almost 20 in. We'll spend just a couple of minutes to the bottom of the hour. We can catch up on some of the racing that we didn't get to yet. And I do have to mention one non-thoroughbred activity from Sunday. We don't, you know, it's only rare that we fold in harness stuff, but hard not to be astounded and just in awe of Foiled Again. Curses. Foiled Again. 100 career wins came Sunday at Harrah's. Unbelievable in Philly. 100 career wins. The 14-year-old gelding. Just amazing. And Yannick Gingras piloting, and everybody just in awe, really, of this 14-year-old. Ron Burke trains, and the horse has now made $7.5 million, the richest standardbred of all time. Amazing. Just amazing. So congratulations. Foiled Again. And if I'm not mistaken, I guess that was Curses Foiled Again. Snidely Whiplash, right? Not Simon Barr. No, that wasn't Simon, because Simon Barr won a race, right? Or Barr Sinister? What was it? Simon Barr or Barr Sinister won the other day? But I'm pretty sure Curses Foiled Again is Snidely Whiplash. There we go. Okay. Dudley Do Right, right? Sweet Polly Purebred, reaching deep. Well, you know, by the way, since I went in this direction inadvertently, it makes me, I promised this late last week, and Sunday we did get a chance to go visit this trio of 2-year-olds that we procured coming out of OBS June. And we've got a Looking at Lucky colt. And 2 Courageous Cats. You know, that's what made me just think of it to bring this up. 2 Courageous Cat fillies. And one is a little bit small. She's on the smallish side, small, quick type. And I named her Minute Mouse. Courageous Cat and Minute Mouse. And this is so funny because Aaron Yagoda and I on Saturday were talking, and Aaron said that he had a Courageous Cat and that he had reserved Minute Mouse, but then he let it go because he ended up selling the Courageous Cat. And I had the same idea, Courageous Cat and Minute Mouse. If, you know, I'm 58, and that's about right. I'm about as young, I think, because this was Courageous Cat had to be mid-60s, right? Mid-60s, Courageous Cat, Minute Mouse, and there was the frog, right? There was the gangster frog. I'm sure they're on YouTube, actually. I should go pull up some Courageous Cat and Minute Mouse. I do know that Bob Kane, who the creator of Batman, created Courageous Cat and Minute Mouse. That much I know. Anyway, Minute Mouse, M-I-N-I-T. I didn't spell it the normal way. M-I-N-I-T-M-A-U-S. Minute Mouse. We also got a Courageous Cat filly that looks like a turf sprinter, looking at her. I'm kind of excited about that. Name-wise, this was an amazing story. The Courageous Cat filly, the first one is out of a mare called Brush Me On. And the second one, and that's Minute Mouse, the second one is out of a mare called 5 Silver Stars. So My idea was to something, you know, obviously Courage, Courageous Cat, and 5 Silver Stars. I mean, there had to be some military history. There had to be something interesting to tie in Courage and Silver Star. So I went looking, and turns out there's only been a handful, and this is a filly, so it had to be a female to name the horse after. And there's really only been a handful of female Silver Star winners, which kind of surprised me a little bit. Anyway, I found a story that was remarkable, and it goes to the Pacific Theater in World War II. And I found a story about a woman, a Filipino woman, who was among the handful of World War II Silver Star recipients. And even her story only came to light at the end of her life, a woman by the name of Magdalena Leonis. And she basically was a spy for the American military, captured 3 times by the Japanese, and talked her way out of it all 3 times. An amazing story. I'll put the link up. She died a couple of years ago at age 95, and she really did not even her children were aware of her heroics during World War II. It's a remarkable story. Magdalena Leonis. And the Philippine Historic Society had recognized her, and I'll put the link up and you read the story. So I named the Courageous Cat 5 Silver Stars filly Corporal Magdalena in honor of her. So those are the 2 fillies. And the colt, who's a looking at Lucky, is out of a cat thief mare by the name of Exclusive Woman, and he's all brown, and he's got one little wispy, seems like he's got a little wisp of a star that really didn't materialize on his forehead, but basically all brown. And we've named him in honor and memory of one of the great boxers of the middle century, Kid Chocolate. Kid Chocolate, also known as the Cuban Bonbon. Kid Chocolate was a tremendous featherweight and won 150 fights. Tremendous boxer. And it's funny how these names, you know, you the one part about this was fun that I hit on all 3 without getting anything refused. Usually you have to put 3 or 4 names, you know, before you get approved, but all 3 of these came through. Kid Chocolate, Corporal Magdalena, and Minute Mouse, and we're excited for Saratoga. And All bred by Barry Ostrager and prepared by 3030 Ranch, Heather Larson, and they are really well prepared. They're first of all, they're all pleasant to be around and kind and level-headed and professional on the racetrack. Amazing. They came in and right off the van took a day to acclimate, very sensible acting, and Heather clearly does a terrific job for 3030 Ranch, preparing these horses for Barry Ostrager, who, of course, has got a long history, a successful history here, Quest Royal North, and so I'm delighted to have these. We've got, and if anybody, I'll put a thing on Twitter. We've got a little bit of room, not a lot, but if anybody's interested in joining up, we got about 6-7 partners involved in the 3 horses. And if you want to have some fun at Saratoga this summer, we're pretty excited. So there you go. I one reference to a cartoon character, and off I went in this direction. Let's take the timeout. Bottom of the hour when we come back. Dr. Stephen Allday, and the sale was underway at Newtown Paddocks at Phasic Tipton. They're getting going, and the yearling sale season. Dr. Allday working, and we'll get as many insights as possible from him. I want to talk about weight, which is going to start to turn up in PPs pretty soon. How do we use it? What can we, you know, what does it mean? How do we interpret? So that, and we'll also find out, I'm curious to ask about what's different when you have horses of racing age, when you kick those tires, right? We got, you know, it's a, I don't want to call it a used car. It's not exactly, but, you know, somebody else has been driving it. What do they call them? Gently owned, previously owned, not used. Dr. Allday joins us next. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. Second half at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
All day, all night, all day, all night, all day, all night, all night. What the fuck?
We're back at the races, second half on this. What is it? It's only Tuesday. I've lost track already. And Dr. Stephen Allday joins us. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. We'll go to the sale, and we gave you some of the horses of racing age results. The yearling portion of the sale today going to be closely watched, and Dr. Allday on hand to help out and to do any evaluation. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
I got a bunch of things for you, and I know you might get
buzzed at any time. So let's dive into it. We'll get to the topic that I was originally drawn to you for, which is weight. We'll do that on the back end. Let's talk sale for a minute. What is different about a horse of racing age day like yesterday and, you know, horses that do have mileage on them versus the yearling sales and two-year-old and training sales?
Well, essentially, you're looking at an untapped, untouched, and unevaluated individual. You're buying on confirmation, movement, pedigree. And so, therefore, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. The one thing that you have in your advantage or to your advantage, when you look at and or evaluate a young horse or compared to, let's say, a horse that's a racehorse, you're looking for, you know, the difference is you've got a proven track record. You've got, you know, basically something you can build on. You know the service, that there's their preference. You know if they have residual value, meaning that they've got black type. Pardon me, I got a frog in my throat there. I apologize.
Not at all.
But you're looking at, you know, essentially a situation where you have a known entity that you can establish value, sheet numbers, handicapping, you know, this sort of thing, versus, you know, potential. Obviously, people will pay, you know, I mean, you have an unknown versus a known entity, and you know, you know what to look for. At least, okay, let me put you like this. I have a pre-established, you know, set of criteria, what I can live with on a racehorse, because I mean, that's what I look at, you know, 6-7 days a week. Whereas yearlings, I mean, you know, like we talked about, or you mentioned first crop sires, there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of, like, you know, questionable things. And then you can, you know, evaluating potential and what you'll pay for potential is sometimes extremely, you know, a wide open question mark. Whereas, you know, you pretty much know or have an established value of certain things in horses, as far as, like, if they have a track record, if they have a proven service that they're effective on, this sort of thing. And you can establish a lot more of what, you know, a horse can give you back and what you'll pay for it versus what you're buying or putting up your money for as far as a blank page is concerned.
Exactly. And how much more forgiving is a blemish in a existing racing / broodmare prospect, or as we saw yesterday, stallion prospects? What allowances and leeway is there when figuring out what to pay and, you know, what potential issues as opposed to a young horse where, you know, we've talked in the past, Steve, particularly around Keeneland Fall, there might be a knee fleck, ankle fleck that has to come out, those kinds of things. Several vets will give opinions as to whether it's in a spot that's going to bother a horse. When it comes to the wear and tear on the, like, a one-liner, for instance, and that type, revved up, you know, these horses that are going to continue on with their careers, how do you approach those?
Well, totally differently. Obviously, confirmation is, you know, you can throw that out, okay? I mean, you know, if the confirmation experts were to go to the racetrack, they'd probably commit suicide. They'd probably have to carry a gun with themselves and blow their brains out because, you know, what they consider to be, and that's coarse. I shouldn't say that way. But unfortunately, it's true, because what ends up happening, Steve, is that, you know, there's confirmation and predictability as far as, like, you know, what you think potential's there. Then there is performance records based on, you know, you can throw confirmation literally out the window, because a pretty is as pretty does at that point. You may not be the most perfectly made individual, but if you're the horse that's got the kick coming down the lane or you're the horse that basically shows the speed, or you're the one that closes on the turf and you have an effective race record, you're going to bring the money. And that's what it comes down to. Performance counts is at this juncture, and you can throw a lot of the blemishes, splints, curbs, things that you wouldn't, that you'd be knocking on a yearling, you wouldn't have, that wouldn't even come into consideration on a racehorse, because these are things that these horses are living with and are racing with in the war zone, and the war zone is the racetrack, and that's where the performance and numbers all come into play, and you can throw a lot of the subjective and or genius moves of the bloodstock and confirmation experts out the window.
Yeah, it's a different kind of dice roll because you, and I suppose this is true of any purchase, you know, mid-career purchase. I guess it fits the same bill, Steve, as, you know, the times when a young horse makes a splashy debut, you know, might be, you know, operating at one of the B tracks. You know, for years we thought of Calder in this scenario as a fountainhead for, you know, for bigger outfits that would poach, you know, developing horses. There's a lot of horsemen that make a living off that, you know, that style. Then there's the Euros that, you know, that people are shopping for all the time. It's really not any different, I guess, than evaluating those kinds of horses.
Well, I mean, you're going to look at things just a little differently. I remember, you know, that sometimes guys would go kind of ride the cookie jar at the lesser or maybe a cut below market. But I remember spending a winter in New Orleans, and Bobby Frankel called me up and asked me if I'd go up to Hot Springs. Had to do it that day to get a horse looked at that had just broke his maiden. And I went, I flew up there, flew out of New Orleans, went right to Little Rock, rented a car, went over, and I vetted Medaglia d'Oro. And now Bobby didn't tell me what he paid for him, but, you know, he just run what he considered to be, like, you know, his point to me was that, listen, I've never seen this horse before, so you got to be my eyes and ears on this one. But, like, you know, if you like him, vet him. And if he vets, like, you know, let me know. Call me up right away. So, you know, and like, they get quite a bit of money for him for horses broke his maiden. But as it turned out, it was well worth it, obviously. You know, but I mean, this is what you got to do. Sometimes you got to do a little poaching. He found Lido Palace that way down in, not Lido Palace, but the colt by him that he sold for quite a bit of money. And bottom line is, I mean, you know, you've got to, you know, follow your instincts and go find these horses sometimes in those lesser markets. If you think they belong or they've been overlooked, or maybe it's one you may have to pay a little more for, but there's a lot of upside on the other end of the deal. Peace Rules was found, you know, that way, and you can go on and on. There's a lot of horses that way. So, I mean, you know, you gotta look at what you're looking for and then what you think their upside or what the potential is to improve them on.
And you, it's funny you bring up Mr. Gann and Bobby. And by the way, yesterday would have been Bobby's birthday, and saw that note on the internet yesterday. Was El Prado, was he in the process of gaining notoriety, or was Medaglia d'Oro the start of that notoriety?
No. El Prado was brought over as a champion 2-year-old from with Coolmore over in Ireland, and then Mr. Stronach brought him here to the United States. And the horse's career, literally, I mean, was made by Frank Stronach.
Right.
He found mares to go to him, and he had a huge broodmare band himself, and he supported the horse very, very diligently and made the horse a six-figure stallion by virtue of the crosses and the quality and the horses that they would find and families that they would find to go to him. And as it turned out, the public became more and more you know, captured by the horses that Stronach was producing from a somewhat unknown stay and pedigree for dirt racing in the United States, because see, he's with Sadler's Wells and Lady Capulet. But the bottom line is the horse was basically a turf horse that came to this country and transformed to both dirt and turf, and turned out to be a fairly effective sire with sons and now grandsons that have been influential to the stud books here in the United States. So Frank gets all the credit for that. And as it turned out, a lot of other people fell in the lines and into the ranks as well, as far as being you know, fond of and or, you know, becoming a popular sire line is it's carrying on as it's turned out, which is a good thing. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of the Northern Dancer line. It was probably one of the more invigorating stands and crosses that did pretty well coming back in the United States from across the pond.
Well, yesterday, the older horses. Today, the yearlings. As the season gets going, the yearling sale season underway with Phasic July. Steve, let me get some weight-bearing questions out in front of you.
Right.
The speaking of Frank Stronach, the Stronach Group tracks started at Santa Anita over the winter. Rick Hammerly told everybody back in December this was going to happen, and the project has been expanded. They're weighing horses on the backstretch and keeping tabs. They're feeding the information to Equibase, and steadily the weights will be fed into PPs. And this goes on most notably at Hong Kong. And it in some cases, there's people, much like any other handicapping element, that's folded it into their approaches. And I'd love for you to give everybody a primer. We're also going to talk about Justify, but give everybody a primer on typical weight fluctuations in the racehorse and what we can begin to look toward in understanding what the numbers will mean when we're confronted by them.
Well, it's an interesting proposition, and the reason why I think it's quite actually it's somewhat entertaining for me is that when I worked for Stronach, we had electronic scales. When I was managing his racing stable, we had, in the late 90s, we put an electronic scale in Kentucky and New York, and we routinely weighed the horses, and I demanded of the trainers that were working for us that they get these horses done on a daily basis. The reason why it was more important to do it once every day instead of once a week was that if you happen to hit a day that you gave, let's say, Lasix or something like this, you can change, or the weight can fluctuate quite a bit. 1 gallon of water weighs 8 1/3 pounds, 8.34 pounds. So, you know, basically one shot of Lasix in the morning, if a horse hasn't reestablished his hydration, can make a huge difference in a horse's weight. So what I did was routinely said, listen, this scale will be right here every day just before feed time. Just walk the horse across it, put it on a chart, and write the number down. It's electronic scale. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, mindless work. It wasn't very hard. And actually, it worked out really well to do it that way, because what happens is you get a horse in a routine. As soon as he walks across that scale, he's going to go back in his stall, and his feed's waiting for him. And horses are very, very, you know, very much creatures of habit, and they get conditioned to that, and they actually look forward to doing it. So what we would do is I would, you know, get those numbers, and when horses were showing really, really good work patterns, the bloods were really good, and they had were putting on weight going into events, meaning that, you know, we at the age that we had most of these horses are still growing and maturing physically. So we would know there would be an exchange of both in development of muscle tissue, and we would see a gradual incline going into big races and on steady, solid work patterns that were on horses that examined very sound an expectation of a good performance. As it turned out, routinely we started seeing this like on a regular basis. And so if we started seeing a horse that would lose weight after an effort or would take a long time to get back to their target weight where we saw better performances, we would start looking for maybe ulcers. We would look for treatments maybe for infections. Maybe something was bothering them as far as soreness. Then they would many times be cases that we would have to do some sort of intervention, either medically or physically, you know, for lameness, in order to get them back on target or get them back on a positive incline where we would see an improvement in their weight status or a maintenance of their weight without a loss. And it turns out that if you look at this sort of thing very, very closely, it's a good indicator if your horse is doing right or doing well or versus not doing well. It's more difficult, I found, if you do it on a weekly basis than doing it on a daily basis. I could see better tendencies or better trends if I had it on a daily basis, because horses' weight will fluctuate quite a bit with water intake and or medication administration versus like on a cyclic basis, you know, from week to week, that's a real tough call. But on a daily basis, I could see it where it would go up and down, fluctuate. But the overall tendency would be there where I could see where it was improving or basically starting to go the wrong direction.
Give everybody a range, 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds, and then fully mature horses. What is the basic range of weight and male versus female? Any difference, or is it does that not enter into the equation when it comes to
horses? Sure. It makes a difference. Fillies tend to take a little bit longer to recover as a rule. Weight won't be nearly as important. You can use a rule of thumb, but 2-year-olds are obviously going to be lighter than a 3-year-old, which is going to be lighter than a 4-year-old. But it also has to do with genetics quite a bit. I mean, if you get a big street cry or a mare like Zenyatta or a horse like Medaglia, who was a monster, he was a big, stout, you know, muscular, but a big horse too. It depends on their pedigree and whatnot. So you've really, you know, if you get a horse by, you know, Tappet, who's not a, you know, he's not a huge, doesn't get huge strapping horses. He does get the odd one, yeah, but on average, like, you know, that's out of a little bit of a smallish or if we're fine mare, it's obviously going to be a smaller. I think you have to take every horse on an individual basis, but you're looking at 2-year-olds weighing somewhere around between, you know, fillies being 900 to 1,000, maybe, you know, 1050, whereas colts would be a little heavier, be 1,000, 1050, whatever, maybe up to about 1,100 pounds. But, I mean, we've had horses weigh up close to 1,300 pounds that were older, like 4-year-olds, like 4-year-old stands. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, there are individuals that just are bigger horses than others and stouter and heavier bone and whatever. But you take every horse as an individual and you see what their tendency is when they're performing well and they're putting weight on and they're training well. It's usually an indication that you should expect a good performance. If you see where a horse is tailing off in its performance and his weight tends to be kind of slacking or going the other direction too, it's probably an indication that maybe something is just not quite right and needs to be investigated and looked at a little closer. And that's, you know, that's essentially what I use it for. I mean, it's just a tool, but you have to use it along with all the other tools you have. And then, of course, obviously, you know, I mean, if it was, I couldn't find much in the way of lameness or a horse was showing a drop in weight, then we would look internally for, let's say ulcers, something of this nature, you know, which can be either gastric ulcers or hindgut ulcers, things like this. So there's a number of ways to apply it, but, you know, it's no different than any tool. I mean, it's like being at the Mayo Clinic, you know. If you can have all the best diagnostic tools in front of you in the world, but if you got Mo, Larry, and Curly making the call, you're still going to get the Three Stooges diagnosis. So you still take a little bit of brain power to go with it, you know.
Everybody.
You always laugh at that, but I can't help but use that term.
It's a good line. It's a good line. The typical percentage, or if it's not percentage, then numeric expectation, how much water loss and how much weight loss should a horse typically experience after a race effort?
Well, typically you'll see, well, let's say a horse goes into a race at 1,100 pounds.
Okay.
They get administered Lasix. The exertion, let's say it's a mild dirt race, okay, which two turns on a lot of tracks, one turn on certain tracks. You would see, let's say, with a major effort with a horse that was coming in on a positive incline that was evaluated and considered sound, blood showed that he was really, really healthy, you would look at somewhere on the order of about a 3 to 5% weight loss, surprisingly enough, and maybe as much as 8 to 9%, depending on, you know, amount of heat, if it's in the summertime due to dehydration or whatever. And that recovery period is very unique for every individual. We'd like to see it back going in a positive incline within a week to 10 days and then try to get back to that target weight within, let's say 28 to 35 days, somewhere between 4 to 5 weeks. That's was usually the typical turnaround on efforts. And I also got sheet numbers on his horses to determine if it was a big effort, what it compared to the previous efforts, what their weights were in those efforts. And I had a couple of horses like Awesome Again that was a four-year-old that was a lot more stable. He wouldn't fluctuate near as much as a two- or three-year-old would because he was a lot more becoming more and more mature as he got older, obviously, you know, and was a lot more stationary. So I could evaluate on a regular basis from race to race, which direction that horse was stabilizing and or getting back to. And as it turned out, it was a pretty good tool with him because he started six times, won all six races, including the Breeders' Cup Classic and the Whitney that year, along with the Stephen Foster, where he beat Silver Charm and came back and beat him again in the Breeders' Cup. So the point is, you know, he was like my, you know, poster child for that. But I use it on two-year-olds. I use it on turf horses. I use it on, you know, every mares, you name it. And I did see tendencies and trends that were different for every individual. So, you know, and then, you know, like I said, I could share, you know, all this knowledge with you, but you know, the old adage, you know, I could, you know, it's kind of like on a need and know basis. And, you know, it was kind of like, I needed to know and maybe you don't, you know?
So basically, but 40 to 100 pounds, depending on the size of weight loss.
Surprisingly, yes. I mean, and I've seen that happen exactly because as soon as I got it back on the scale, then I would look and see how much or how quickly they would recover. And that would be a good indicator, you know, obviously, you know, over time. And like I said, I'm not a big believer, you know, of the, you know, I mean, and listen, it's always great to see a horse go back in the tub, but, you know, that weight doesn't lie. And you know, you can have a horse that essentially will be back in tub right away and they don't put weight on. And so therefore you can have something metabolically that can be out of kilter or a problem that way. So, you know, I like to use a lot more, you know, things, and I'll take a blood after races, see if their blood recovers and they're good and solid that way. And just do a lameness evaluation, see if anything comes up, like typically first day or two after a race when all the medication's clear, usually second or third day. Up to a week, I'll keep a pretty close eye on, like, you know, joints, soft tissue, this sort of thing. Watch them on the racetrack, see if they're jogging good, and then just see if everything's coming around and we're coming back and recovering good, hydration level, color of the hair, and, you know, essentially the ability to, like, you know, like I said, if they're cleaning up and this sort of thing. But all these things are all, you know, a combination or indicators of what you're looking to see if this horse is coming back. And when one of those indicators tends to go the other direction, then it's time to go in there and start doing your homework and let's get this horse back on track, whether it's medically, lameness-wise, physically, chemically, whatever you got to do, you know, whatever you got to do to get this horse right in order to get him back on a positive direction if he's going to continue in a race career.
Electrolyte replacements, and you know, we hear people say, you know, that after a race they gave the horse a jug of you know, basically Gatorade, and you know, basically trying to get the fluid level up and the electrolytes in balance. How much of this is simply water, and then how much of it is muscle loss? And on that same topic, if we look at two horses, Steve, that have the same basic physical dimensions, is there considerable spread in terms of bone density and muscle mass that can show a differential of weight, even though two horses look to be about the same size?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, they can be the exact same weight, but one can have a little bit more, let's say, a denser or a heavier musculoskeletal structure. You know, they could be a little, quote unquote, a little better bone versus, let's say, a colt and a filly that might weigh the same. And a lot of that, you don't necessarily see a lot of breakdown of muscle tissue, but you need to be, you know, like we give condition scores on top of the weights. And when we want to, you know, make sure that the condition score matches up with this horse is putting back on this weight, and that we're putting on weight that is actually reserve that this horse can draw from is in the form of energy and or fat. So there are considerations. And if the horse is basically, if he's getting a little bit, let's say losing a little bit of his top line, or maybe his hips are showing, or maybe his lower back comes to a point being versus flat, so the muscle is showing some deterioration, that you have a diet that's conducive for his maintenance of his structure. And number two, the fact that he can go ahead and not only maintain that muscle definition and or structure, but also put that reserve on to cover those ribs, make sure the back is covered, you know, so he has plenty of energy to, you know, to call on when he's needed to. And that, and as we're finding out, and as we have found out, that every horse is an individual that way. So, you know, and like I said, we used to have the luxury of utilizing things like anabolic steroids on these horses to try to keep this muscle in there and keep them on a, in a, in a positive nitrogen balance. We don't have that anymore. So therefore, you've got to, you know, you've got to use proper diet and, you know, certain things to help maintain them, you know, naturally the best way you possibly can. So all these things come into play now versus, you know, what you have. And because you still got to play in the rules, you know. You
can't, sure,
use things that are illegal, and because you're going to get a bad test, and that's certainly going to put you out of the game as soon as possible. So,
you also, one of the other nuances of this that's going to be very difficult for people, and I imagine it's going to invite some issues that not every horseman is going to be thrilled with, because the uneducated, I don't want to paint a broad brush, but, you know, owners are going to look at weights, and people are going to look at weights, and certain questions are going to arise. I can tell you from a mare that we had called Kicking and Screaming, who was basically training herself in the stall every day by walking nonstop, a stall walker.
Yeah.
This was a horse that was impossible to keep weight on, no matter how much you put in front of her to eat. And you also get picky eaters. And, you know, these are the vagaries of, as you say, individuals. And so, you know, there's some horses that are going to look like they're not maintaining what is going to be viewed as a competitive weight. But in fact, it's just them, and it doesn't mean they can't go out and compete equitably.
Well, that's exactly right, Steve, and it's an excellent observation and point, because it just goes to show you how individuals have to be evaluated. The metabolic, you know, burn on one particular horse is totally different than, let's say, the neighbor, the horse in the stall next door. So diets and or medication and or training regimens have to be tailored and customized for every individual, that you can get the most out of them, help them recover the fastest, and whatever it takes to get them to be the best performance-wise that they can be on an individual basis. And it's also, you know, it indicates, you know, maybe let's say one that walks stalls, if something is being missed, you know, I mean, that's creating, you know, them being uncomfortable, nervous, whatever, whether it's, you know, something in their diet, or maybe they have ulcers, or they need some sort of adjunct, you know, or difference in the way you feed them. For instance, it may be a horse that needs free choice feed all the time, just to kind of eat whenever they want. Others need to be on a regular, you know, like I said, that they consume more and they do better when you put them on a regular schedule of 2 or 3 feedings a day. So everybody's unique, and you've got to, the art of training is the ability to recognize what these individuals need and how to get the most out of them, so you can keep them in an environment that they can thrive and perform at their peak or their best at, that gets the most out of them and helps them, you know, creates an environment that they can do the best as far as earning or indoor racing and winning is concerned.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the other parts of this discussion, in addition to the Stronach Group's initiative to include weight and the monitoring of weight in PPs, the story from last week where Bob Baffert said that he was backing off Justify a little bit because he could see for the first time that, in fact, he had lost some weight. And after doing an unbelievable job for 4 months maintaining his weight and, in fact, gaining weight during the Triple Crown, which was just mind-boggling, that he, as Baffert said, he's finally shown us that he is a horse. He's not a machine. And, you know, I thought that was an interesting scenario, that in the downtime that, you know, finally, maybe during a little decompression period, Steve, the horse, you know, started to show a little bit of tucking up, and things maybe caught up with him a little bit.
Well, maybe not so much. I mean, maybe that's just, that could be, it's a possibility that's maybe a little bit of a misread. Now, first off, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that this horse is a machine. So, okay, I mean, that's just my opinion. But the second thing is, you know, maybe he's one of these individuals that I've come across, you know, in my career, and I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of nice horses, but some horses tend to do better when they're doing something. They keep maintaining their weight because they need the activity. They need. We had a horse called Cigar who was a pretty good racehorse himself, and when he was out of training, he shriveled up and looked like hell. He looked terrible. When he went back into training, this horse got back in the tub, got his condition back. He was a horse that thrived, and his whole demeanor, his whole everything about him, he was better when he was training. He was healthier. He kept better weight. He was just one of these kind of horses, and you come across them every now and then.
Yep.
When he came off knee surgery, he looked terrible. When he got back into training, he turned into Superman. He was unbelievable.
It's an interesting element and a view that I can think of some others that didn't want to leave the racetrack. I mean, in fact, when you thought you were doing them a favor, they don't want to get on the van. They get to a farm and they hate it. They run the fence line. They're miserable. They'd rather be at the racetrack. It's an amazing. It's a truth. It isn't just a people putting a happy spin on horses in training.
Well, they're bred to run. And I think the ones that are really, really quite efficient, effectual runners, I think they really enjoy their job. I think they look forward to it. And I think they like that environment. And there's a reason why they're the stars, you know, their game, because that's the environment they thrive in.
And Dr. Stephen Allday, he thrives as a equine practitioner and has for decades, one of the absolute most important veterinarians in the game's history, and brought to you each week, almost each week, by Luberson and Reborn. And Steve, get to work, help some people pick out yearlings, tomorrow's stars, and as always, we appreciate the visit.
Thanks, Steve. Good talking to you. Take care.
Tremendous visit. Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Visit Luberson, Luberisyn.com. And, of course, Reborn, the colostrum product that Steve created that I can tell you from personal experience, observation, can in some cases save a horse's life. Just an amazing product. Then there's the opportunity to interact with Dr. Allday and with Alex Hassinger, the AllDayWay.com. Whatever kind of horse you have, Steve and Alex can answer questions. Having an issue that you can't figure out, that something that's bothering your horse, reach out to Steve and Alex at the AllDayWay.com. Little past the top of hour three. It's been a busy morning and expected to be. We've got more to do, and that includes a visit from John White, as well as Dick Powell and Jeremy Plonk. Tomorrow, we'll look forward to a visit from Sid Fernando, and we'll look at the sale results. Probably get a recap in, too. Maybe Jessica Martini, maybe, tomorrow. I haven't asked, but I'm sure if I asked, she would be happy to visit. And, of course, TDN's coverage and Nicole Russo's coverage today as the sale starts to really get clicking here. The visits, too, that were owed, we owe some other horsemen. I want to get Kellen Gorder in here. Napal Chatterpaw, by the way, let me mention this for a second, because that performance by Cacho ND, it came up a little bit with Kenny McPeak in the Stars and Stripes. This horse, we go back to the Manhattan, and there were any number of people. I know Ed, for instance, and Ed mentioned Cacho ND the other day as a horse he was going to use. The idea, and Andy Serling asked this question, if you're going to have this horse in a race like that, weren't you supposed to go to the lead? Well,
They went to the lead, and you saw the result. Nice win. Congratulations to Nate Paul, Chatterpaul, and team, Cacho and D. I want to talk about Joe Bravo when we get back as well. Lots to do, more to do. Stay with us. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com performance plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 38463.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.